Welcome, everybody, to the Reflex Blues Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, and we have with us two of the educators in the Omaha area, Ashley McFeely, teaching over at University of Nebraska Omaha, and Jim Wolf, teaching over at Metropolitan Community College.
Hello.
So how are you guys doing today? Welcome.
Thanks for having us this morning.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great to be here. For as much time as I spent in your office, I've never actually officially been on your podcast.
So. Yeah, I know. I realized that and figured we'd correct this. And I was mentioning we don't record a lot of these at the 1119 studio as much anymore. I mean, we do a lot of these on the road, or we don't do as many shows, you know. So it varies, but we decided to have a few. Make sure to get some in.
Yeah, this podcast has been all over the place, too. Now it's a pretty big honor.
We're going to Georgia this year. We've never been to the South in the show, so it'll be fun.
Very cool. In Georgia, huh?
Yeah. That's the plan. Hal's going to be there in 2 months, so.
But today we're bringing it home.
Yeah. Yes. And we were also mentioning that, Jim, you've got your spring break coming up next week. Now, Ashley, you think you and I was on spring break this week?
I am on it. Yeah, this week.
When I taught at Metro, the spring break there is Saturday, Sunday. It's amazing.
It is a whole 48 hours of pure bliss where,
I mean, the kids are going to come back, and they'll be like, they forgot the school even existed. They're gone so long.
But hey, those kids that have the Saturday class, that all-day Saturday class, I bet they are loving it right now.
Yeah, because then they get like a whole 2 weeks off, technically. Well, I'm sure that they're working on their homework and rereading their textbooks and all that kind of stuff.
Who doesn't do that on spring break?
Sure.
Yeah, so you know. But the other kids, nothing. No spring break at all.
No.
But that's a scheduling deal with, 4 11-week quarters or something like that?
Yeah, it's once our school year starts, it just zooms along. So that's just how it goes.
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about because when you guys are dealing with curriculums and classes, a lot of the things that you have to deal with, you have to set up like what projects you're going to do like the year in advance. Mm-hmm. So there's no like changing where it seems like in the quote real world, you know, things could change a lot quicker. So we see trends go up or down, like you work on projects that may not have existed before and then never exist again. How do you go about thinking about what to teach a student when you have to plan it a year in advance? So you have a little bit more, I assume you have to have a little bit more foresight of what's going to still be relevant in like a longer term process?
Well, at Metro, okay, there's two ways that we deal with that. There is one way that we deal with that, but the core curriculum that we teach is really meant to cover the basics. So the basics from, you know, the basics of typography, the basics of how to develop a concept, of layout, of logo design, all like the classic principles of those topics, don't change too much over time. So when the classes are covering the basics, they have to necessarily pay attention to the trends. But things do change in the world of design, and so we can offer a special topics course to try out a certain set of projects, a certain topic. And the special topics courses are great because it doesn't have to go through the same rigorous process that a quote-unquote regular class would go through before it makes it into the catalog.
Are these all these courses that you read about on college where they're all of a sudden teaching a course on Klingon?
Yeah, that's...
Are those like special topic courses where they say, hey, we're teaching Klingon for a class?
And that's
like,
exactly what it is, yeah.
Yeah, and so you teach and I've been teaching more of those lately, and it's a little more work because you don't have this curriculum history and a set of lesson plans, but it's also kind of fun because then the instructor is closer to how the student feels in terms of, oh, well, that was a surprise.
So what's like a recent class that is topic for InDesign, in the design field, that's been like this, like a special topic?
Well, for me, I've been teaching, this quarter I'm teaching a class in WordPress. So that is actually something we're going to add to our catalog and our web design curriculum. But we just started teaching that this year and still working out the bumps and the rough spots, but it's been really fun to teach it. I'll be interested to see what happens to the class once it formally goes into the catalog, because I taught it in fall quarter, and then I didn't teach it in winter, and as I was getting ready to teach it in spring, just that the 3 months in between,
sure,
I'm like, oh my gosh, they changed all this stuff. And so part of me kind of maybe wants to keep it as special topics.
Yeah, I assume it's hard. Like, there's not really a textbook per se on WordPress, is there? Because it changes so quick by the time they print the book, I would assume that...
Yeah, there is no textbook for that. Well, I foolishly, because I'm 5,000 years old and I still like books, I foolishly, at my, before we go any further about this, props to Chloe Markham, who actually wrote the curriculum for us and dragged me kicking and screaming into the world of WordPress.
She's great.
Yeah, she's outstanding. You know, I was kind of silly and I'm like, well, is there a good textbook? And she just smiled at me like, what are you talking about? And so I've been telling students, I tell them on day one, I'm going to teach you a lot of things about WordPress, about designing specifically for WordPress. But the thing, the number one thing I want you to walk away from this class with is how to teach yourself things. Mm-hmm. And get used to the fact that unlike your basic design courses, it's not necessarily a standard set of things you're going to learn. It changes so fast. So if you learn nothing else, learn how to learn. And if you... You know, if you're not comfortable with that, then maybe WordPress is not going to be your best friend.
Well, maybe doing anything in the web won't be your best friend either.
So, yeah.
it's not just WordPress. I think it's that whole digital realm is not going to, if you want to decide that, hey, I'm going to get to a certain point and then quit discovering new things, you're not going to do well.
Yeah, that's a good way to summarize it. I ask, on the first day of WordPress, I ask my students, what is the keyboard shortcut to make your computer explode? What is that keyboard shortcut? And they're all looking at me like, did he just ask us how to explode the computer? And I say, trick question, there is no keyboard shortcut. You cannot make that, well, there's a way to make it burst into flames, but not by pressing keys on the keyboard.
Sure.
So don't worry about it. You know, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I always find that the key that I tell people when I teach them web at all is, like, you just have to be okay with hitting the undo button a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, test. Oh, whole page went white. Undo that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great model for education, you know, by itself anyway, is just learn how to learn. And then what I use often in my class, the phrase is test and approve. You know, test it out and then see if it actually works. And if it doesn't work, then go back and test it again until, you know, it actually works in application. And specifically to design, I think that model makes the most sense, because there's no, as we know as designers, there's no one formula to get, you know, the answer. There's multiple ways, but you test and improve it and put it into application. Have it on the screen, but does it actually work in real life? You know, test and approve. So... yeah, I'm on board with that model.
Yeah, and it's no different than how many times somebody will move a vector point on a logo 30 times and print it out, you know, all these minute things. There's no difference. The only difference is that the one that doesn't work, like, nothing appears. That's the only difference between, like, the logo and the web page, the undoing.
Mm-hmm. Which you might think actually makes that test and approve cycle quicker.
In a way,
because
I guess it does.
It's,
yeah.
When on the web, when it's broken, it's so clearly broken that there's no, like, did I get that? Is that the right solution? It's like, no. That's a blank screen is clearly the wrong solution.
Yeah, or you're looking at a logo and you're like, well, maybe the letters could be a little further apart, maybe closer. And, you know, and then you're like, yeah, there's a definite right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Although I like... You mentioned that example of kerning. I also like the areas of design education. God, I wonder, do students listen to this blog, do you think?
I don't even know who listens to this thing
anymore. I tell my students all the time to listen.
All right.
I like those areas of design education where there isn't a clear answer, because then students are always wondering if they got it right.
Right.
And so, but then they go back. Then they go back and they revisit and revisit mm-hmm. and revisit. So that's one of my favorite things to teach is that day where you introduce kerning and typography one. And I'll tell students that to look at their kerning one more time, even if I think it looks good. Because I want them to develop that sensitivity. So,
well, and that's one of the fun things too about teaching design is once they get to that point, then they look back at all their other projects that they did before getting up to that point, and they're like, oh, you know, you see the light bulbs go off of like, oh my gosh, I did not kern that stuff, or I didn't know anything about margins or breathing, you know, room for text. And it's just really fun for them to go back to their own work, you know, months later and see all those things that now need correcting, you know, because I think that makes it personal for them.
And I don't think that ever stops.
Yeah, never.
You can be in this profession forever and you still look at your stuff from 3 months and you're like, what was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's developing that sensitivity to your own work and developing an objective and critical eye. But if you can't make that in an assignment in the class. Today, I'm going to teach you how to be critical of yourself and to never stop trying to improve your work. That assignment would tank.
Right.
So I hide it in things like, okay, this is what kerning is, and so it's a little sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, well, we'll be right back with Ashley and Jim. So when you guys do a special topic, is it something that you guys decide? Like, Jim, did you decide, like, hey, let's start teaching WordPress? Or was it something that students started asking about? Or, like, how do you figure out what it is that...
It usually comes from the faculty. So any faculty can propose the special topics. And I proposed that as a special topics. Well, special topics also can come about if faculty think, hey, we want to make this a regular part of the curriculum, but we need to test it out first. And so I stay in touch with the design community and always try to find out what new and emerging skills.
Right, and then you heard like, oh, WordPress has been around for 10 years and like a fourth of all websites are built on it. Maybe we should look into that.
Yeah, that's how it came about. And then find a way to build that curriculum and test drive it.
Okay.
Yeah, and at UNO, it's very similar with the faculty bringing up different topics. And because our graphic design is a concentration under the studio arts major, we work with, you know, different disciplines. And so we have like a media arts, we have an art history, we have 2D and 3D in there. And so we hear different topics and then we discuss how we can incorporate those all together, you know. So if we brought in a class specifically for, let's say, like the media arts, then we talk about, well, how does this help graphic design, for instance, or how would this help our 2D students, you know, or painting students, and, you know, try to make it a beneficial class specifically, or especially so if it's like a special topics. But yeah, so we recently had in our media arts has been growing quite a bit.
Is that the department that the graphic program's under?
No, actually, it's separate. It's a separate concentration is what we call them. So it's a studio arts as a major, and then underneath that you have an emphasis or a concentration.
Okay.
And so graphic design is its own concentration. We have our own core courses that we take, but they have a foundation in studio arts. And so in media arts, it has more to do with video design and game design. And do they do video editing? And we actually recently introduced a new course, which is animation and illustration,
right,
which you can see already, you know, there's a tie to game design, or even video art, digital printmaking sort of things. But then you can also see how an illustration and animation class would benefit graphic design. And so, yeah, these courses get introduced and then we do the whole thing again of, trying it out, seeing if it's something that, gets good enrollment and good feedback. And then if we teach it 2 times and it does work, then after the second time, I believe the third time, it's supposed to go into a full-time class rather than a special topics course. So it follows that same test and approve and enrollment and But a lot of it, I think, is generated by faculty staying current with the trends, but then also from students, I think, feedback too, where you just notice where students are generally moving toward.
And I've seen, like, there's a lot more, I think, digital, I'm drawing a blank on the name now, but, like, animation of sorts.
Absolutely.
Digital media. But is there like, a huge, like, jump in, like, game design?
I mean, I've been teaching now for 10 years, which is nothing compared to Jim's experience.
I'm only a few years ahead of you in that, like 11, 12 years.
Okay. No. So, but in that time, it's been amazing to me, specifically in these last, I'd say 3 years, really. I've seen students, and even more so this past year, talking about gaming and game design, and that's, you know, when I give them an assignment where they get to choose their class topic, it's been overwhelmingly about video game or game characters and virtual reality and, you know, those kind of topics instead. So something to keep my eyes open, you know, when we're developing curriculum. I don't know if you're seeing that so much at Metro.
Our game design and development degree is pretty popular.
Yeah.
It's never lacking for enrollment in those areas. So, yeah, it's and we've had that for several years.
Which is interesting. In Omaha, we don't have a big base for where you go with video design, do you? My understanding is it's more like in Colorado as far as like proximity to us is for jobs and things with game design. And
you know, the other guy that works here part-time, he actually then spends one day a week working with a video game company of sorts.
Here in Omaha?
Yeah, but I don't even think they haven't quite launched their game yet.
Yeah.
So I know, and I had a former student that did some work for video games here in town. I don't believe he's doing it right now. So I know there's a few spots, but it's not enough to like fill a whole program of graduates in this market.
But that's where students are going, which is entrepreneurs, listen up. Start some game.
Now, to be fair, I went to college for design in Kearney, and there's not enough jobs anywhere in Nebraska except for Lincoln and Omaha.
Right. You guys all come to Omaha.
So, like, you graduate, and it's like, okay, you're going to move at least 2 hours away because mm-hmm. there's nothing here.
Or I've kind of wondered, because I don't know the game design and development students very well, I've wondered if that is more of an entrepreneurial thing, where the goal, at least locally, isn't to get a job at a studio that's producing games, because I don't know of many of those, but maybe it's just to do freelance, to work remotely, or to get together with other people that are interested in it and develop a game on their own. So maybe it's more entrepreneurial, so it's harder to see who's doing that.
I think it's just important that you, if you're going into to get a degree of something, that there's a very slim likelihood of you actually being employed there, that hopefully there's enough overlap of jobs. Like, maybe if you couldn't do games, you can at least do, like, motion graphics. That's the thing I was looking for.
Yeah, there is a lot of overlap. Motion graphics or just 3D visualization. So there might not be a one-to-one relationship between, somebody wants to develop and design games. Maybe not so much of that, but there's other ways they can apply that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what you were talking about, you know, in segment one, of just that they're building up a foundations of basics. And then, I mean, then it becomes just a program learning curve or software learning curve rather than like a foundational, you know, developing that eye in those long-term things that you either innately have as a designer or you just like hone in on as a designer.
Yeah, if all your education does is tell you how to run software, it's probably not a good education.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, probably not.
And it's not going to be long-lasting.
Oh, so no.
Learn how to learn, as you said.
Yeah. And I like that all this multidisciplinary approach to all these related design fields, because I can remember over my own career, there were times where a client would say, hey, can you do this animation? And you say yes, and then after the client leaves, you all look at each other like, I'm talking early 90s.
Sure.
When it just wasn't as prominent as it is today. And so you figured out a way to solve it. And then I look at what schools are doing today with all of these different disciplines coming together, and it's like, gosh, I wish I would have had access to something like that when I was a student.
It just makes sense.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat that all that stuff is being covered.
And I think as our, you know, community as a whole, we're just much more global and connected, that it just makes sense that, you know, students would have more versatility and like merging different disciplines instead of like putting themselves in one niche market. Or even as you see like job market trends, I'll make it for students, but I think this is across the board that, you know, students aren't just staying in a career for their whole lives the way that like our grandparents did or our parents did, but they're hopping from job to job to job to job. So it is much more fluid than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We're gonna take one more break, and we'll be right back with Jim Wolf and Ashley McFeely. Jim, you also had an interesting, has it been a year, 2 years ago?
It's been a year.
A year ago? Yeah. So since you guys also want to do a continual education, and they have teachers take sabbaticals, like, you know, when I was in school, I think we had a teacher, you know, he just took off like 3 months and then had an exhibit of all his paintings, and they were fun, and every, you know, he did a different painting style or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you decided you're a designer, so you can't just, I don't know, go paint a bunch of things that didn't seem to match with what you wanted to do.
Yeah, so what I did a year ago when I was on sabbatical, I was on sabbatical for 3 months, and...
And that just means, now the sabbatical for those who don't know, it means you just take 3 months off where you're supposed to do...
Something.
Something.
Yeah, and it's different. Since I teach at a junior college, we don't have quite the same requirements. Like if Ashley were to take a sabbatical, I'm sure the requirements are a little different.
Yeah.
So at least at Metro, you write a proposal for your sabbatical, and if the committee who's reviewing sabbaticals thinks that that's a good idea and it's going to help you become a better educator, it's approved. So it's kind of wide open. So I wanted to get more into the web design curriculum. And I thought, well, how can I do that quickly? And so I applied for a sabbatical to be an intern, to go intern at a design studio somewhere in Omaha. And so I pitched it as the world's oldest, you know, like 40-year-old intern was my pitch.
Now, to be fair, there's a lot of non-traditional students, so there's older interns when they graduate. But there's probably not people who have 20 years experience in their field that then go intern.
True. I shouldn't make those presumptions about
you might be the I would call you the world's most experienced intern.
Okay, we can go with that. I thought it was a funny way to introduce the topic and maybe make myself it was maybe partially for myself to feel better about going out, because when you think of the word intern, you an image comes into your head, and I don't fit that image anyway. So I found a studio actually just down the street from here, Corporate 3 Design, and they graciously let me spend 3 months there focusing specifically on web design.
That was great.
Yeah, I think it's just such a admirable thing to do, you know, because I recognize that, you know, I put that for my own self. If I went out and tried to do something like that, it's a humbling experience, you know, to go back and kind of lower yourself below like even student status sometimes, which when you're faculty, you're more experienced than students, you're passing on knowledge and information to students, you know, you're helping them ask questions, and so you're trying to lead them not necessarily toward where you're at, but trying to lead them up. And so to go back to internship level, it's just really admirable, and you did it for the right reasons. And I'll just say, you know, speaking from the community, it was just a really inspirational story to watch. I think I heard about it, I can't remember if it was during or after your 3 months, but, you know, I would hope that, for myself, it really spurred me on, but I would hope that it would also, you know, inspire others that, yeah, I've been in this rut of teaching full-time for so long, I need to go back and refresh myself and not just, you know, rely on the students to bring all the trends in. But you're on top of it, too.
Well, I also think the longer I teach, the more I feel like there's a risk of being disconnected from students. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have an experience similar to what a student would experience. So since my background is in traditional print-based design, I didn't want to have that experience. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to throw myself into something that wasn't familiar to me so that I could maybe remember what it feels like to be inexperienced and to have somebody set something in front of you and say, you have to do this. So that's, I like to do that in a variety of ways, but yeah, there were moments where I thought, oh, okay, we all made the wrong choice here. Corporate 3, you know, bless their hearts, but this was a bad idea. Or I was imagining that's what they were thinking. But no, it turned out to be a great experience. And there was one project where, well, they're set up like a traditional design studio where, depending on the project, you pull in however many designers you need to come up with concepts. And so I'm designing alongside their seasoned, you know, hardcore designers, and I've been out of the profession for a while and thinking, okay, the client's never going to pick my concept. But then I got to a project where it was just myself and the creative director was doing concepts, and I thought for sure, like, okay, game over. And the account manager came back from the client presentation and said, well, I need to meet with you to talk about building out the rest of the site because they chose your initial concept. Wow. And I stood up and I did the in-your-face dance. They have glass partitions. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, they picked mine. And the creative director just kind of looked at me like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But, and then a tiny bit of panic because it's like, oh my gosh, I have a mountain of work to do now. So that was a really neat experience.
Hmm. Now, did it help you relate to your students when you came back?
Tremendously, tremendously, because then I started teaching more of the web design courses. And I had taught them here and there, but when I first started teaching, we only had one course in web design.
Yeah, I used to teach that one way back when.
Yes, that's right. And I would only teach that if, for some reason, you didn't want to, or if it was during the day, because like I could never convince right. you to teach during the day.
Right.
So, yeah, I taught that, but then now with our increased offering in web design, there's so much more. And there are times where I can see that look in the student's face, and because I just had almost the same experience, I know what they're thinking or what they're worried about.
Hmm.
So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was really, really helpful. And I wish it started making me think about the way that Metro is structured, because we can only go on sabbatical every 6 years.
I think that's kind of the standard, isn't it? Ish.
Well, but it's, and maybe, I mean, Ashley, you can answer. If you're tenure track at a junior colleges, we don't all have tenure.
Right.
But at a university, if you're tenure track, there are, I think you have to, on a more frequent basis, produce something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if Metro, if anybody's listening, I think that the faculty should be allowed to do sabbatical. They shouldn't have to wait every 6 years.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a bit of time. Yeah, when you're trying to refresh yourself. And I mean, at UNO, it's a research-based university, and so they require that tenured faculty do produce research, you know, and account for that, whether it's like papers for like the art historians or writing books and things. But then, yeah, for our studio arts faculty, it is producing works and doing exhibits. But
then does their class load get reduced?
If you're doing a research, yeah, it would be reduced down. Depending on what area you're in, whether it's a 4-4 or a 3-3, then it gets reduced. But
yeah, I could freelance whenever I want to, but I would still have to teach a full class load and all that stuff. So
right.
I'm a little old for that.
All right. Well, Ashley, Jim, it's been great having you on. Thank you. Thank you once again. And
yeah, this was fun.
Let's catch up with you again.
All right.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.